Welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. Or in
did you just change your name, Helmut, from Helmut to Helmed?
Helmed to Dwight. Or if you want to go the northern north, western region where Helmutana, Dwighta, that also do.
Helmut, you. Yeah, guys, no. remember that's Dwight. Aye, not Dwight.
That's Dwight.
That's Helmut. let's stay focused here, Helmut.
Yeah, Lois is typing.
That too, you know.
It's your Drive Time show, Home Run, with your favorite duo on Eagle FM. Forget the rest. We are your favorite show and your favorite duo on your favorite radio station. It's just us. You know, production office guys and everyone else. Yeah, you forget those ones. Now really have to watch our time. It's the 22nd, so month end is getting close. The finance guys will be okay.
You never wished your favorite demographics on Monday.
Oh yeah, those guys.
You know?
Yeah.
That's probably why the check is close to us. Overpopulated, you know.
I ran into, aggrieved employees on my way here.
By who? Which aggrieved of employees?
I'm not going to mention any names. Public sector, of course.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not us. Thank heavens. We're not here to, the thing is, when it comes to these things, it's the exchange of labor for money. That's work in a nutshell, exchange of labor for money. And sometimes, there are some grievances that are not addressed on time. So you have people that are basically airing their grievances in somewhat different ways. But speaking of money, today's subject is somewhat a little similar to the one for yesterday, albeit the one for yesterday came it dropped in like a meteor. Yesterday, for those of you that have been living under a rock, we had our midterm budget review, which Minister of Finance walked us through all the progress and the challenges we faced for the 2025-2026 financial year. And I don't like to call, I don't like classifying things, especially in terms of describing initiatives as success and failures. I like to look at it as success and challenges. Mm. Yeah, because when I look at them as challenges, low-key gives me hope of the fact that the challenge that just needs addressing. So in other words, you still have a chance to convert them into success. Mm-hmm. But now the midterm budget review discussion we had yesterday is somewhat similar in today's discussion, in a sense that we are going to talk about money.
Yeah.
Albeit today's discussion is money on an international level, as in literal United Nations regular budget that was revealed by. That was revealed by the Secretary General last week, Friday, and on which he basically came up with another term to describe the budget. The SDG updates for last year. Was that last year when he said it makes for a sobering reading?
Yeah, that was last year's report, yeah.
Yeah.
And then 2025's report was like, okay, I'll leave it to these economists to come and throw in, to come sprinkle economist dust.
Guys like worse
all
than
over the thing, and I could still read the sobering, the soberingness during that 2025 report. But do you know what's the interesting thing about this budget unveiling?
Yeah,
and I thought it was just as things are, as normal, probably because pressures are coming about from Donald Trump, who said literally on day one of being inaugurated in the U.S. in January. He is going to pull the U.S. out of the U.N., which is weird because the U.N. is the Americans, I think. I think that statement doesn't make sense. But still, but we obviously also know about the threat towards the global climate fight. Now, I thought primarily, that was one of the particular pressure points on the budgeting for 2026. That would be a possible pressure point because the U.S. is obviously, the Security Council guys obviously was, you can view them as being the foundational members and their contributions obviously as being critical.
Mm-hmm.
But then, upon reading a little bit deeper into the reports, the documents that go part of the whole, you know, situation of the UN, it's actually because of the proposal that Guterres made back in March towards trying to find a, you know, or trying to streamline the UN's functions to achieve not just the SDGs, but also play a pivotal part in the Pact for the Future.
Yeah.
That thing that Namibia and Germany went on a whole PR situation last year, you know, with former President Bumba and what's the guy's name? Olaf Scholz, you know, walking side by side onto that stage there, and everyone was like, wow, is this the Oscars? What's going on here? This is some serious dazzle going on here. Primarily because that document, that event, that pledge, because Pact for the Future is about Northern Hemisphere or developed Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere countries join hands to achieve the common goal in terms of, you know, the SDGs.
Yeah.
Straightforward stuff. It's that thing.
You know, I look at, okay, if you look at the UN, the UNSG, Antonio Guterres, one thing you see is that, this is the, at least that's my point of view on the guy. This is the right person for the job. And he has, he has a lot of, basically, you know, a lot of positive ways that he wants to run the organization.
Yeah.
Except there are a lot of, especially the big players, the top five, the Security Council guys, they are not seeing eye to eye. The UN Security Council is, it's one of those, these guys are locked in a toxic relationship, if you can look at it that way, because, these are the biggest economies. So, you have China, the US, and you have Russia, you have France, and the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, first of all, China and the US have been tariffing the heck out of each other.
Yeah.
And now you have, Russia, we are not even going to discuss that one because these guys are just have been locked horns for as long as anyone can remember.
Mm.
And now you have all these developed countries that wants to come in and say, you know what, we need to overhaul this thing to avoid concentrated power. Now, that overhauling, especially when it comes to the reformation of the UN Security Council, is what's making a lot of big players going like, okay, first of all, there are perks that comes with, there are perks that comes with being, with having a seat at the UN Security Council, especially with veto power.
Mm.
So, all these perks are, if you look at it, are the advantages that, that have made a lot of this, a lot of the, the Security Council members, basically have them that, ultimate power above the guys that, like Namibia that are just, more like on a General Assembly level. All these advantages, it seems like the five guys, all of them, they just don't want to share this power, especially the US, which is why we had the former representative of the US to the UN, Miss Linda Thomas Greenfield, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why when they were talking about giving other countries, including countries on the African continent, a seat at the UN Security Council, one of the things she said was, just give them the seat without veto power. Then everyone's like, what the heck? Because what is a seat at the Security Council without veto power? Then you can see that the ultimate goal, the only reason why the power, or more like the United Nations Security Council is such a small circle, is because of its veto power. You take that out of the equation, the whole thing becomes useless, which is some of the words she used, Linda Thomas Greenfield was, the whole thing was more like disintegrate, or basically it would be rendered useless.
Yeah.
In other words, it can be argued it's been used to, as a get out of jail free card. One too many times that if you share it, everyone is going to have that get out of jail free card, and then controlling the status quo, especially in terms of geopolitics, is going to be borderline impossible.
Yeah.
So to prevent that, don't share. Or if everyone is saying let's share, just withdraw. So now you have Antonio Guterres, who really wants to focus on SDGs, and you have the top five Security Council guys fighting for who must have the ultimate control on which sphere of the planet.
And here's the thing, Hamoud. The presentation or the conversation about this stems literally from a meeting that had to be done back in last week, specifically where he had to present, that's Guterres.
Yeah.
They had to present, but they had presented these tallies and obviously had looked at plans ahead, because apparently it runs, there's a financial cycle, so there are two financial cycles. There's a budgeting cycle for 2026. Then there's a financial cycle for 2025 flowing into 2026.
Yeah.
And the 2025 one seems to be like, think of it like a midterm budget review. But not that you are reviewing where we went. You are basically saying, this is now what we will have in 2026 for certain functions. And then 2026 on its own has its own budget scenario.
Yeah.
Now, I know, guys, it sounds a little bit dodgy and it sounds fishy. I had to read that sentence 5 times myself. But the reason for this is because this process, like I mentioned, actually started in March. And Donald Trump's announcement of withdrawing the U.S., which is a bit weird, from the U.N. Mm-hmm. I say weird because the U.S. is the founder of the U.N.
Headquartered.
They are the founder of the U.N. So it makes it weird. So that particular impact, Hamoud, has to be seen now in 2026 coming up.
Yeah.
A second scenario on top of this is a discussion based upon how does – what's his name? What's the guy's name? Not Trump. How could I forget?
Forgetting Joe Biden, are you?
No, not Joe Biden. But there were obviously discussions in terms of, not an American, Guterres. The discussion that I mentioned to you yesterday, before we stepped in and we quickly had to change our discussion to yesterday's discussion, was that the whole basis of this is that there's a $300 million that has to be refunded back to member states. And at the same time that they were obviously making that statement, there's a $700 million that's outstanding from member states in fees, membership fees. So if you guys thought that being part of the UN was a scenario of just, you are just there for
free
the fun
for
of it, you know, you're just there for the feels or for the vibes, unfortunately, it's not like that. So the SDGs form the basis of much of this.
Yeah.
And this is based also on the funding needs that are required. Here's the thing, Hamoud. If the funding threshold is not met, the 3.7 billion, because they currently have 3.2 billion. If the 3.7 is not reached, let's make it 3.8, because it's extra, extra numbers there, so I'm rounding up. If the 3.8 is not reached, the targeted programs that they have, where they have temporary staff contracts placed around the world, will obviously be discarded.
Otherwise it won't fit in the budget.
Exactly. Hence the reason why he is literally appealing for that $700 million.
Yeah, because they need that stuff. The more the merrier in terms of getting hands on.
That too, yeah. So the funding is, you obviously see $300 million going that way. Now, in any accounting term or in any accounting scenario, the best case scenario, which is the fairy tale scenario you always want in your business life, Helmut, or public sector life, is that you don't want money flowing out because of a refund. But since there's obviously a discussion of probably member states had overcommitted something in terms of their fees, contributions, what have you, the discussion is obviously something that cites, this particular money has to now be recalled or paid back to a member. So when you see things like that obviously also happen, people that have basic financial literacy in terms of, okay, let me rather not say basic financial literacy, basic accounting literacy, the best case scenario is you don't want money flowing out because of a refund. A refund means, Hamid, you're not paying for a service. This is a product that is returned. This is a service that you now have to put back on the shelf, or it's a cancellation of something, and the money has to go back. We're obviously not talking about, you know, the guys who developed the Spider-Man abilities with money, you know, with the, you know,
Spider-Man,
you know, because we all know what happened to Spider-Man, a supposedly nuclear spider bit him and it gave him...
Yeah, don't try that at home.
Gave him mutant abilities. Please don't try those things at home, guys, please. But when it comes to the financing discussion of things, obviously financing is a core aspect, because this is about having to achieve the particular goals that need to be met. I mean, Namibians can just look at it in a Namibian context. Let's now come micro. So tomorrow, the 23rd of October, the United Nations will host a celebration of 80 years of the UN here in Namibia. Now, you obviously have to cite discussions like that in terms of how, I almost said obvious, but how the UN tries, through the various events and stuff that I've been invited to, they are pretty present in, even if it's a hospital groundbreaking or school unveiling, you find one UN representative there. It's always one of the representatives that you find there. Yeah. So it's, if it's not the UNDP at a Minister of Education thing, like the remember the education report, the education
is there, say, is
evaluation. There? What was that report? We did the Global Education Report, Monitoring Report, the GE, the GEM report, yeah. The Global Education Monitoring Report,
yeah.
Where there was, because Namibia is in that report, and people were talking about the significance of education, but the report literally speaks about something else. Hey, man, I love Namibia. I love Namibia. You know, in many cases, people show up, they come talk other speeches and stuff. For example, like at, what was the other UN event? The UNICEF event about the World Population Report that you and I also did and dissected. And they have a UN population report discussion at, what was it, at NAMCOL back in last month. And the people there are talking about, yeah, education is important for a child and the circumstances for a child. But the global population report is based upon why people are not going to have children anymore.
And how that impacts education, because, well, if you don't have kids, who's going to go to school?
Helmut, education becomes secondary in the discussion for a country's national planning. Why? Because the global population report is literally talking about cost of living pressures.
Yeah.
Cost of living being.
And you know what's my favorite part? In any country, how to put this, in over 80% of the countries that are facing population decline because of cost of living, no one is addressing the elephant in the room, which is the cost of living.
No one.
Everyone is just...
The Japanese government wants to bring in some sort of an incentive to incentivize women or partners or couples having children. Now, supposedly, there's a Japanese streamer that once said, yeah, they are trying to, they're probably thinking about the Japanese government of bringing in a singles tax.
If
you are single, or if you don't even have a kid, you know, you didn't even go and test the waters. I didn't want to use my Afrikaans word where my uncle asked me, so, is it working? I didn't want to use that phrase. But yeah, so if you're a single person and you haven't had a kid yet, so apparently, but I couldn't find any concrete... Remember, I sent you the document last year.
Hang on a second. I came across a video also on social media, but that was just, you know, one of those content creators. It could have been one of those things that she met up.
Yeah.
You know, that was just met up. That's when... But I kept laughing because the lady kept saying, Singuru Takasi. I mean... Okay, moving on.
there's another Japanese content creator. He's actually he tries to be a comedian, but he was actually a former, you know, these English teachers teaching English, you know, in Japan. His channel's name is Sora the Troll, and he literally does impersonations there of how Japanese entertainment companies hire someone that can speak English. And then they don't like the way if you're not a Japanese person speaking excellent English, yeah, like you and I and
without the thick Japanese accent.
Yeah. Then they go like, what is this guy saying? What is he doing?
We don't
But then they hire a Japanese guy in it that is breaking the English language. He's literally, how are you doing? And then he literally speaks like that. And he says, wow, sugoi, look at this guy's English. They don't say English. Oh, yeah, they don't say English. They say, Ingrisho.
Social media will be the end of us. Look.
Look. But yeah, yeah, you are right. You are right.
Yeah, I came across that, but... yeah, I think I remember talking about that on one of my weekend shows where, you know, I went back into the single tax ideas. It turns out if that is true and the Japanese government is planning on implementing that, they won't be the first one because you have actually a bunch of countries with one of the most recent one to implement that. And I think it was in the early 1900s and things went really south was Argentina.
Mm.
They tried to implement that. It didn't work because what they said was, okay, you know what, if you are not married, like a certain age bracket, like take for example above 20.
Yeah.
And you are single, then you're going to be taxed. You are going to be taxed unless you have to provide a reason why why you're not married. One of those reasons being put up was, you have to present to the relevant authorities that you are actually trying to, you know, you're putting in effort into maybe asking women out, you know, trying to get married, but you are just not getting lucky. Now, you know what that brought up? It brought up women basically turned that into a business where they formed basically a business model around all you just have to do is give us this amount of money and we'll go to all the relevant authorities. We'll send our representative or more like our staff to go and represent explain to the judge that I rejected him but he's really putting in the effort. So please don't tax him. They made a lot of money out of that.
Yo.
Yeah. So, you can implement that, but you really have to expand your prison space.
Or, expand your what?
prison space. Because, look, man, the point here is cost of living is the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Cost of living is coming into, is mostly caused by... Well, profit margins.
Of course.
Just keep pushing it. Now, at the end of the day, you should have shareholders that are, that are getting filthy rich. And I totally understand shareholders getting filthy rich because they are taking the risk for all these investments.
Mm.
But we are not finding the balance of because the bottom line is for whatever business that's making you a shareholder filthy rich. For that business to run, a workforce is needed.
Mm.
For a workforce to, for you to educate or train a workforce, people must bond. Bottom line, the bedroom must get busy. I don't know why I say that, but anyway, the point is, the realities of life are very awesome. So, look, we are just looking at, we are very shallow in our thinking. I have profit today. Let's put it, okay, we had 13% this year. Let's push it to 15% this year. And then say, and then 17%, and then 20%. The bottom line is, if you are not replenishing, because every year, someone is retiring. And whether we like it or not, every year, someone is dying.
And whether we like it or
whether not, we like it or not, yeah.
People are being born as well.
People are being born as well.
And now, people move in between as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and we are not, if people this is a very reasonable approach. If I don't have enough money to sustain a family, why would I want to have one? And we are not addressing that part. So the UN's budget discussion is one interesting one because in that report they only narrowed it down to their regular budget. Not their overall budget. Just the, you know, the regular budget. This is, budget division, if I can call it that, that is used to run mostly, administrative things. This is their administrative budget in terms of staffing and other expenses. They also have another one, which is a peacekeeping budget, which is just that's basically what it sounds like, strictly peacekeeping missions. Now, the administrative one, administrative expenses are ones that fall under a regular budget, which explains why, one of the things they basically try to put up to sort of like mitigate the shortfalls is cutting temporary staff. But, for them to execute all the programs they have in place, this temporary staff are needed. So that means now if they are forced to cut down on staff because of the shortfalls in the budget, that will also mean they are not going to have as much hands on these projects as possible for them to be efficient in whatever it is that they want to get done. Commission break.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
And we come back, dear listeners, and obviously that is as we come to the top of the hour at 5 already. If you're in your drive time traffic session situation, welcome. Thank you for joining us. And obviously, this is, as you just heard from the short promo right there, this is your home run, your drive time show on this particular Wednesday session. Now, we left off just before the break, Helmut, where you cited the operational side of things.
Yeah.
We obviously also cited the particular presence that, the obvious presence that obviously you see here in a macro level in terms of how involved the UN wants to be here in the Namibian affairs. Okay, not Namibian affairs. That's a loaded to say.
Politically, yeah.
No, that's a loaded sentence I just said there. Let me rather say not loaded. Involved in Namibia's developmental, affairs. Agenda and affairs. So you would obviously see, much fanfare taking place at various kinds of activities and the likes. Even to help with SME development programs. I mean, what's the lady's name? The UNDP country representative, what's her name? Was always present at particular events before that Ministry of International, of Industry and Trade was now broken up into parts that went to two other ministries itself. That in itself helped to also show, how involved the UN was, trying to be in Namibian developmental aspects. You've got the Food and Agriculture Organization with Ministry of Agriculture. They sometimes drop their updates there on that particular group. In many cases, we try to interview some of their particular people because they would bring in interesting reports and stuff based upon agriculture to one extent in terms of what the UN sees or this FAO organization sees, agricultural development in Namibia, how do they view it? How do they see it? How do they assess it? And then obviously there is the World Health Organization, which has probably been the most elusive one that I have not had the opportunity of recording much from. So you obviously see at the various levels. Now, each one of those agencies I mentioned, obviously they've got their own particular roles to run or things to do and, developments to try and achieve. The discussion from you is just like you highlighted. There's a question of obviously what are the developments going to hold for us in 2026 with various things starting to take place. Remember, here's some of the other oddities. So if a country becomes also part of the UN, there's also further levels of, can we call it entrenchment? Being entrenched in the UN process. Yes, yes. For a country to become further entrenched in the UN process, Helmut, it then subscribes to the World Trade Organization, the WTO. And the WTO is the international platform by which if trade disputes occur between countries, they register it there.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, since Donald Trump stepped into office at the start of this year, China has been continuously submitting submissions to the WTO, which is one particular, platform, as I highlighted.
Trade dispute resolution body.
Well, look, it's weird, Helmut, because in many cases, a country, if you're a country like the US, you would go like, you know what? I'm trying to get out of this club anyway by next year.
Just do.
But the downside has been you have to interrogate why.
Hang on a second. So it's like one of those things that I've seen in, okay, let's go with movies. I've seen in movies where someone wants to, get out of a relationship. So they start giving excuse like, let me call you back. I have to switch off the microwave.
Oh, we must start looking for other places to sleep, Ned, please.
Yeah.
I don't want you coming over here, or I don't want to come over here anymore.
I think we should start seeing other people. Oh, that person is already seeing someone. I think we're okay now. How did we move from international discussion to relationship advice?
You referenced internet. Yeah.
I'm excellent at that, by the way. Just for a fee, I can give you the worst advice on the planet, financial, political, or relationship. But anyway, so I want to get out of this. Some countries that are giving the vibes of, I want to get out of this relationship anyway. So I just do whatever the heck I want.
Mm.
Break every law that guides this organization.
But the situation like that, Hamur, is also a discussion in terms of you've got to weigh them up for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I'm citing that you've got to weigh them up, in terms of, like unique, angles, unique perspectives, unique, measurements to apply to this discussion has been, okay, what do you see happening in your country respectively? Because New York is very far. Geneva is also very far from us. So we obviously don't know what are the inner workings there. Now, the discussion obviously is predominantly, like you already cited, much of the cuts will obviously be applied to staff cuts because this is where there would be a decline potentially in, the 2026 proposal for funding, is for 13,800 posts. So meaning jobs. 3,000 would be for special political mission positions and 10,600 would be for regular posts. So it's from 13,000 to 11,500. So this obviously means that about 18.8% could be cut.
18.8%.
Yeah, in 2026, if this funding threshold is not met. So the particular reductions that they cited here is that it targets larger departments and administrative functions.
Yeah.
While it also protects programs that directly serve member states. So, for example, the fear within it would have been, if Namibia has direct programs attached to it through the various UN agencies, would those programs be impacted? So here they primarily say no. These would be admin and other particular admin-based roles that would be impacted because the targeted experts and professionals around the programs need to stay there to see the program complete or primarily run its course or achieve its particular end. Now, they're also trying their best to protect any programs affiliated to least developed countries. Yeah. Because least developed countries and landlocked countries like our neighbors Botswana and Zambia and Zimbabwe and there's Malawi as well. All these guys obviously face particular developmental challenges because they don't access trade as easily. If you have a coastline, as anyone would know, a coastline is an automatic buy-in.
So it's much worse for landlocked countries?
Way worse.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about this.
Yeah. It's way worse primarily because with landlocked countries, it's not easy for them to access this trade component easily. Yeah. yes, they can build a world-class airport. The question still is, you know, how do they bring themselves up?
Flying cargo is ridiculously expensive, which is why most of it is shipped.
Exactly.
So shipping means seaport.
And if you don't have a similarity of the same kind of, if I can call it, private sector network that Namibia has from South Africa, it makes things even more difficult. Way more difficult. I mean, obviously you can try and see some of the things that tried to happen last month. No, at the start of this month with the Botswana and Namibia engagement, the start of this month. At the heart of the Botswana-Namibia engagement is literally the discussion of trade. Botswana wants trade. They want to ramp up trade. They want to ramp up trade with Namibia. They want to ramp up trade with their other neighbors. So that ultimately, what does that mean? That means trying to negotiate favorable terms. Trying to find a way of helping their economy become more resilient. This also means Namibians importing from Botswanan businesses. And when you look at a scenario like that, this obviously means that primarily, you know, if, because the UN says, the UN's mantra is let two countries talk to each other first.
Yeah.
Sort your issues out with each other or negotiate your ways around each other.
In other words, be grown up. Yeah. And get us involved.
You guys first have to talk to each other before we can become involved in things. So that's what Namibia and Botswana conducted. But it's a question of, will this, whatever agreement. And that's the pivotal thing. That was also one of the reasons why I knew what was gonna, how the flow would go with that Botswana-Namibia commission, that situation, that engagement. How would, ask the media now, we are inquisitive. We ask questions. But our questions are sometimes also silent questions in terms of, what is this about? Now, you would sometimes see the Ministry of International Relations send out statements and stuff and invites to us. And then they say, come and get your accreditation here, here, and here, and do this and do that, and be ready for this and this and that. And then most of the events that are like open for the media to cover are events when no speeches are taking place sometimes.
Huh?
Yeah. Or it's a thank you, thank you, hello, hello, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for coming.
We are welcome. Thank you, thank you. We hope that our talks will become, you know, fruitful.
And then there are no talks?
And then you, the media, get asked, please, can you now vacate the room? We want to talk. So you don't know what is going to be discussed. You don't know what are we going to
need to discuss. It's a private conversation. Why do you invite me?
But it's not supposed to be private, Herman.
So more often.
And then you get a communique at the end, a communique which was literally that thing that you and I cited once, the all protocol observed.
Oh, yeah, the South Africa, Namibia, and Orange River discussion.
Yeah, all protocol observed for four pages out of 7 pages.
And then the rest of the 7 C is, we have had this discussion before.
Yeah.
And the conclusion was drawn, but only drafted and for the eyes of the executive guys.
Yeah. Of the two presidents.
And the intelligence. And we've, you know, that information is
highly privileged.
Yeah. It's a highly privileged. It's a need to know. Yeah. So you guys just, hang in there. So that's why we came here. Have a good day.
Now, at the heart of everything, when this commission was established between Botswana and Namibia, I had gone and read beforehand. I tried to find, you know, literature. Why does this thing exist?
Yeah.
This commission is primarily because Botswana is advocating, and this is back in 2023, Botswana is advocating for Namibia and Botswana to become more closely connected to each other, primarily through common sectors like tourism and trade. I know tourism forms part of trade, but I have to split them because many Namibians who know and have seen this phenomena happening at the coast, if you're living in Balfour and Swakop, you guys would have seen this. you would have seen all the Botswana number plates. How would they drive in a straight line?
Especially in December, you see a lot of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, you can obviously see the benefit for Namibian businesses, because how many Namibians would you ask about going to Botswana for a holiday? Namibians would rather say, rather take me to the coast of Namibia.
Yeah, it's the ones that I know that are most likely to travel into a different country, especially their neighboring countries, like you have Namibia and Botswana, Namibia, Angola, Namibia and Zambia are those ones that are close to the border, to the borders between Namibia and any of these countries, because they have relatives on the other side of the border.
Yeah. So.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. So we continue. So visiting each other, it's more like a cross-border travels, which is something that we also, you know, we want to boost the, on a continental level, because it's been pointed out like a gazillion times by a lot of Africans, not just Namibians, that it's much easier for an African to travel to, to travel outside of Africa than within Africa. Because of all the, the flight ticket prices and the visa restrictions and throwing the safety components and all that.
Mm.
Now, Botswana and Angola, these guys, contribute significantly to our tourism. I totally understand Botswana more, because they don't have a coastline. So if you want to have that, that seashore coastline, sandy beach feel, you have to go to a neighboring country that has a shore, because Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, they don't have that. And if you want to look at the regulations, especially the travel regulations that we would like to implement with Botswana, and more like we are slowly implementing with Botswana, of traveling between the two countries only needing a barcoded ID and not a passport, that's also basically loosens up your travel, lessens your travel burdens.
Well,
The thing is, it doesn't matter how easy you're going to make the travel regulation. Bottom line is, traveling is going to require money. But
at least the nice thing is, getting now back to the UN funding discussion.
Yeah.
Now, I thought, and this is pure naivety on my side. I had naive thinking process.
Yeah.
I thought all countries paid this equal amount of money to the UN.
That's also what I thought, until it was explained. That's when I went like, thank heavens we don't pay equally. Because
Namibia paid $238,000.
Hang on a second. And,
so that's 4 million Namibian
So
dollars.
Something I want to, I haven't looked up on is, are this annual or monthly?
Annual.
Thank heavens.
Annual contributions.
Yeah, annual contributions. Yeah.
So, Namibia has a contribution of $238,000 to pay, which is 4 million Namibian dollars.
Yeah.
Obviously, we are just 3 million, a country of just 3 million. But if you look at some of the larger countries, there's Canada that has to pay $87 million US dollars. France has paid $132 million. I think the UK also paid something like close to 100 million, like 97 million as well. So you guys can obviously see primarily the contributions. Yes, it's discriminatory, because primarily it's
based on your economic abilities.
That too, and it factors into
the weird politics that we could not understand for a long while in terms of why do we always walk with an apologetic voice when we come to these international platforms. But it's good to know that at least you know what Namibia's account is full, is paid up in full.
Mm-hmm. So,
so proud of you, Namibia.
We can talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we actually have a voice, you know?
Yeah, we have a voice.
We have a voice.
Yeah. Like, that's actually true for the, that's actually true also for the UN Charter's, you know, UN Charter's point of view on that. For any country that goes beyond 2 years. Beyond 2 years without paying its annual, yeah, without paying its annual contributions, they lose their vote at the General Assembly.
Plus,
so no more voting for you. Just won that chair. Thank you.
You can still come. Don't worry. We will still invite you. Don't
Savage.
But don't worry. You know, it's there for everyone.
Yeah, it's, I mean, after all, we are here to promote inclusivity, but, you know, you there's a limit. Yeah, you didn't pay, so just the seat and
and guess when we
I'll be very petty if I was Secretary General. I mean, for those of you that didn't pay, only 2 glasses of water per day. The rest of you.
Guess when we paid.
No buffet for you guys.
We literally paid on the 14th of Feb. We were so eager, we paid up front. We paid early. The year started. Here you go.
Look, this is why a lot of our neighbors who provide us with the energy we have, you know, can have all kinds of, you know, the highest degree of load shedding. And we have seen this with us.
Actually,
you know.
We paid literally on Valentine's Day on 14 February.
Very romantic. Look, the thing. Okay, some of these things just comes out. Like you have seen our neighbors, like South Africans, and Zambia, have gone through load shedding themselves, but they always supplied electricity because we're very good at paying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this one thing we miss when it comes to our energy, because we're very good at paying because, well, the end user is also good at paying. So if you have outstanding payments, then that's going to impact the international energy supplier payments and load shedding starts. So next time you see a municipality knocking at your door telling you to settle your dues, please do. Please
and
do.
And then we've got obviously some of our African friends, for example, like Guinea, Central African Republic, Guinea-Bissau, who all paid like literally on 3 October. 2 October.
This October?
Yeah. 30 September. Nigeria paid literally on 25 September.
Wait, do they have a due date?
No, you should. Yeah, there's technically up until the whole of December to pay.
So for them to pay for their 2025.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have up to December. We paid in February? Jeez.
Hey, man. We were eager beavers.
Yeah.
We were very eager.
We just now.
It seems that most of the Africans also decided to pay like after July, because you have Zambia that paid on 19 September. Zambia has a contribution, their membership contribution is $204,000 US. We are 238. We've got less people than Zambia. We and Zimbabwe have the same
annual contribution
membership fee. Sierra Leone paid $34,000 US on the 19th of September. You had Madagascar on 11, obviously before One Piece decided to One Piece, you know, Madagascar.
Well, at least they are paid. I mean, settled. Just before descending into.
Into what they descended in, yeah.
Captain Die Hard.
That too, yeah. A lot of
how much is South Africa contributing?
I'm now trying to look for South Africa. I think they were one of the earliest. But wow.
And they,
Israel pays 20 million. Wow. That's a lot of money. But yeah,
that's the US paying. Go on.
I don't see the US. That's the thing. I tried looking in the first list as well. I don't see the US. So it's probably literally as he said. I'm stepping away because the United Kingdom had to pay like 136 million. Where's Canada? Canada had to pay 87 million, or they paid their 87 million in January. Most of these guys paid in January, the first batch.
Yeah.
Norway on 22. Switzerland, 35 million.
And I still don't see...
No, that's too low for Switzerland. They must increase that thing.
And I know Russia is here as well, because I saw Russia. But...
Yeah, they're still a UN member state. And there's Security Council member.
Yeah, because there's no way that they could kick Russia out. Russia is one of the founding members of the thing. Remember, it's Russia, France, the UK, and the US. China came on later on. That's just why we Africans are busy shouting. You know.
Basically, every
we wanna be there.
Basically, every international organization at this point needs reformation. It's like it has taken in a lot more members, and the organization demands that this 190 something UN member states work together towards accomplishing SDGs. In other words, they must all take care of their people in the best way possible. We're talking about all service provisions from transport, health, education, you name it. They must have a certain quality that is works for the economy, that feeds the economy. Gives them, advantage economically. And you can't do this collectively.
South Africa has not paid.
One more time.
South Africa has not paid. Even Botswana has paid.
Why? Oh, blue Lambos. I mean, it makes sense if that's South Africa at this point.
I mean, even I think Angola also has not paid. I haven't seen Angola. Yeah, Angola hasn't also paid.
South Africa has not paid.
Liberia and Gambia have paid.
And South Africa has
Mozambique has paid. Mozambique just had to pay $68,000.
That's their annual contribution, right?
Zimbabwe with sanctions has paid.
South Africa?
Russia has not paid. I don't see Russia. I also don't see Germany. Because I would
That's
have seen,
odd.
I would have seen Germany, Oh, South Africa is here. 8.5 million. Sorry. There they are.
Just wondering.
Yeah, I was a bit worried now.
It's like, hang on a second.
That would have given Donald Trump ample evidence.
You're right. I don't think we would be reading about that, because Donald Trump would have pointed it out.
Yeah, you guys don't pay your fees, eh? Yeah, so South Africa has paid. But it's obviously a thing in terms of who are the guys that probably have not paid. And so far, 136 countries have paid their dues. So obviously, the appeal that Guterres made was to the other 60 countries who still need to pay their stuff.
Okay. Like which countries, though, that didn't pay? Because these are the things that you have to factor in. Because you have a lot of UN member states that have some significant economic instability. That you'd actually, would not expect them to basically,
Ukraine even paid. Ukraine that was told last week they have to concede the territories that the Russians are currently occupying in order for Donald Trump to get his peace deal. Between Russia and Ukraine and Russia and the rest of the world. So...
The painful thing about...
I mean, Germany even paid at 194 million. So,
oh, yeah.
Even Nepal has paid.
Before One Piece.
Before One Piece. Nepal literally paid on 3 Feb. They were one of the eager beavers, just like us.
Yeah.
3 Feb, they already said, here's our money. And then One Piece happened in Nepal.
Yeah, I can imagine, I can imagine our government was, early January, let's pay. Just hold on. But it's February. Let's pay.
We've got money.
Let's find a strategic date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just send that EFT.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monkey D. Luffy shows up.
If
you guys don't know, that is... Oh, no. The Japanese don't say Monkey D. Luffy. They go Monkey D. Luffy.
But look, the Japanese accent is really awesome.
They must literally stay away from all the region. I'm sorry, Angola, for naming you guys, but yeah.
Okay, this is now, from the look of things, going to lead to some budget cuts, where you have, where you are going to have, basically more like a, downscaling of staff members, which are needed to execute the programs that are being prioritized. So, in other words, expect some sluggishness in the implementation of a lot of these programs because of the lack of manpower, because they'll be operating basically a skeleton crew because of the lack of funding, because some countries do not want to contribute their annual dues. So this is a picture, picture this as a family, you know, a family Christmas contribution. You have a family member who is out there looking after cattle. You have someone that, you know, is a teacher, one that's a security guard, even the one that, you know, has a salary high enough to afford Poloni, like CEO, for example.
Polonia.
I need a filter. Now, now this.
Polonia.
You couldn't even go with a Smoky or with a Landjäger. Oh, what was it? Yeah. Is it Landjäger sausage?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm saying thank you because it's funny you think I can be able to pronounce that. You just want to be, you know, you really want to accommodate everyone in terms of contribution. So you don't expect someone who is working, take for example, as a as a teacher, to contribute the same amount as someone that is a babysitter, for example,
yeah.
Because these two are on a different salary scale. So you basically work out a formula that enables all of them to contribute based on the source of income, which, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's even further interesting, Helmut, specifically that I'm sharing a quick document with you that I also just stumbled on while you and I busy chatting here in studio. It actually gives like the report itself about what's at the heart of everything. Because talking just about staff is like a run of the mill thing, specifically that any person would go like, oh, okay, so it will impact how you do certain things in the offices, like who is standing next to the printer machine to print the paper. But we all know that you've got a computer connected to the printer that you can press the button from the computer to print the paper at the printer.
Yeah.
You don't need a specific person to print for you. However, there was a statement that Guterres had where he gave, you know, for this particular, back on 13 October, which was last week or the week before.
It's 13 or 17? 17.
No, this one says the 13 distribution date. The document I just shared now there. At the top there. So, on 13 October, when he wrote this particular report, and what is obviously at the foundation of the discussion are slightly two different things as well. Why do I say this? Well, here's one of the first particular things that they speak of. And I'm just reading for you, dear listeners. This report is focused primarily on four financial indicators relating to the operations of the regular budget, peacekeeping operations, and international tribunals. Assessments issued, unpaid assessments, available cash resources, and the organization's outstanding payments to troop and police contributing member states for peacekeeping missions. Now, I know Namibia is one of said particular countries.
Peacekeeping missions?
Yeah, we sometimes participate, specifically in the police peacekeeping or police contributing member states.
But was that the reason why Kenya sent, was asked to send police officers to Haiti?
No, Kenya's guys, Ruto, said, we will sort out Kenya. We will sort out Haiti. We will show them best policing. And then
has this guy read the history of Haiti?
I don't think so. And do you know what was the weirdest thing about that statement that Ruto made?
Yeah.
His own young people and his own concerned citizens turned around and said, but you can't even deal with a crime in Kenya. And you want to send police officers that side?
To Haiti.
And you know what's the nice thing also for the police officers? They get a USD salary because it's a UN mission. And then the local salary is just, you know, accumulating lovely.
But that doesn't make sense.
Why doesn't it make sense?
Okay.
This is outside of the jurisdiction you have to perform. Plus, you're being sent to another dangerous jurisdiction.
No, I'm not talking about the salary, but the fact that you have to send. Okay, you have to understand that at this point, you may as well just be sending an army to Haiti because of the status the country was in.
But then that is invasion, how much you can't send an army to Haiti.
Yeah, because you have to understand the type of, take for example, if you're a police officer in Namibia, you're dealing with Tura boys, but if you're in Haiti, you are dealing with the barbecue guy or whatever his nickname was, because this guy is running around with an assault rifle.
Not just him, the other guy. There was another dude.
These guys has assault rifles, walking around with them in the street proudly.
Yeah.
You can't police guys
and
like
that.
And
then they say, no, this part of the city is mine.
That and you send the police to come and talk to that guy? What about human rights are you going to explain to that guy that will not be able to him, that will not end up with him shooting you? Yeah, nope.
Now, do you see the particular scenario based upon such particular peacekeeping missions? And then obviously one of the perennial contributors, I say perennial because I always see them in police, peacekeeping missions. It's countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh, who's the other country? Namibia is there, I know. I don't know if Namibia is currently there, but at a specific time when my mom worked in police in Nampal, she used to tell me that it was a sought after assignment that Nampal guys wanted to be part of. They wanted to be there. Do you know why, Ahmed? Apparently it was linked to some sort of a ranking system as well.
Okay.
Because you get a rank increase for participating on this thing, in this exercise. If you're on this international mission as a Namibian police officer. Which sounded cool because I was like, wow, maybe I should also go to join.
Like
what's that college's name that's here outside on your way to Okanya? That police college?
Oh, yeah. Hang on a second.
It's not the danger one. The danger one is most in the north, closer to Oshakati.
Yeah, it's very visible if you are in Okahanja. You've seen it like when you're facing south.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should be able to see it.
Yeah. So, but then I heard about some of the starting pay situations, and I was at one stage going like, nah. Nah.
What is some of the
starting nah. I was like, nah.
Look, man, I think.
I passed grade 12, brand, nah.
Look, man, people are built different. You and I build for books. That is not our strong suit.
We can be police officers. We can be. It's just, Hamoud, it's just, look.
How am I handcuffing Ninja?
What? That's most why there are four of you handcuffing Ninja. Not
and then all four of us goes back to the base without front teeth. Now I have to explain to the commander.
That's why you also have to go and gym and buff up and get the body.
Are you kidding me? Guys like Ninja will just grab me by the legs and then use me to beat the rest of us. Okay.
I'm really back sorry. You and this continual person. Okay.
Yeah.
But here's the thing I would. It's just the scenario of, like I said, in another particular scenario of, you know, the police function is but one of it. You've got the peacekeeping troops, for example, like the Irish that are continuously, that have been there for the past 20 years in Lebanon. When, you know, Israel at the start of this year and somewhere in last year, do you remember when they decided to fire rockets into Lebanon? And because what was the guy's name? I almost said Hamas. What was the organization's name? What's the other organization's name, Helmut? The one that's designated as a terrorist group. They in the Hamas, Palestine.
There's the Lebanese based one.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
But it also operates into
into the
West Bank, into Gaza. What's that organization's name?
Is it Hezbollah?
Yeah, Hezbollah.
Yeah.
Because Hezbollah is most the Iranian funded one.
Mm.
So the Hezbollah guys in Lebanon were making noise about how they will invade Israel from the north of Israel, meaning moving into northern Israel. And then the Israelis sent tank divisions and some army units to go and bolster up a border control with Lebanon so as to, you know, just prevent any such particular movements. Now, is it known? Yeah, the UNIFIL, that's the peacekeeping mission's name in Lebanon. That's the United Nations peacekeeping mission, which is Irish. It's the Irish army there. Those guys, there's literally like a no man's land zone that they have to patrol.
Yeah.
Between the borders. So, but it's on the other, it's on Lebanon side. So the UNIFIL guys, they obviously have to get paid, you know, because they are the Irish, they are Irish armies, soldiers that are literally there in Lebanon. And Israel now rocks up with American hardware shooting into Lebanon. And the Hezbollah guys are busy, you know, what do they call it? They're busy slamming their swords against their shields because they want to do funny stuff. You know, into northern Israel. And you are these peacekeepers here in the middle of things. So that obviously means also because what people also don't know is that in the modern military context, the families have to get paid of soldiers who pass away. It's like a danger payout that happens to the, you know, that the family receives.
Fallen soldiers.
Yeah. For fallen soldiers. Now, obviously, you as a peacekeeper, you find yourself in a hot zone and things are not looking good and people are showing up with better hardware than you. You know, it's not going to make the situation easier. Yeah. Obviously, the SADC one into DRC was not a UN mission. That was not a UN mission because that was a SADC mission that was sent there. That one from South Africa, Malawi, and
yeah.
Who was the other country?
Where the South Africans, I think the South African military is still pissed about that.
Yeah. So it was South Africa, Malawi, and Burundi that sent soldiers in there to Eastern DRC. So that was not a UN mission. But there were UN peacekeepers on the ground.
Yeah.
And remember, the UN peacekeepers were being accused of committing rapes, committing other kinds of human rights abuses.
Smuggling of pretty much everything you can imagine.
Supposedly smuggling things. And in many cases, Hamoud, all I could find was that that this was predominantly, what do they call that stuff? Misinformation and disinformation. Because they were trying to influence something on the ground to get these guys, to get those UN peacekeepers out of the zone.
So give a dog a bad name in order to hang it.
In order for you to go and commit crimes. So that primarily was what was going on also in that context. Now that our listeners obviously have this particular context of understanding how important the funding specifically is to what happens on the ground, wherever you see it, wherever you find yourself in the world, please don't find yourself in any war zone, guys. It's not a nice thing to know and to see and to probably find yourself in. But it states here also that the decision of the General Assembly in its resolution of 76/272 to increase the working capital fund by $100 million has enhanced the measures of the disposal of the organization to mitigate the impact of financial crises on its regular budget operations. However, the continued and exacerbated liquidity crises illustrates that it remains imperative to address the late payment and non-payment of contributions for a durable solution to the liquidity problems. So that means the UN specifically suffers more from a cash flow issue than from money in the bank. Cash flow means buying copy paper for the printer.
So there is money, but no one is buying something, what?
No. The money is there, but then the money is tied up in other projects. The money is budgeted for projects. The money is budgeted for targeted interventions. The money is budgeted to pay for these particular commitments. But to do anything extra, cash flow, that is the biggest concern. Or that is the bigger concern, as outlined by this particular discussion. So, as you can see, dear listeners, the conversation is one that highlights or puts a spotlight specifically on where the money needs to be used. So you can deduce from, okay, there might be staff cuts, but most of the staff cuts have to do with admin jobs and potentially with trying to maintain the personnel to targeted interventions and programs to make sure that they stay on board or they stay active. And now we also find out it's peacekeeping missions and it's refunds and it's late payments and it's, some guys who have not paid for a very long time. I mean, Helmut, that other document, getting back to that document, let me just go back. Back in 2024, 152 countries had paid their dues. Remember, there's 180 something countries that are members.
Yeah.
You said 190. I'm saying 180 something because sometimes the number shifts sometimes.
Yeah, because there are those that I think under suspension, usually how these things go.
Myanmar is one.
Yeah. Commercial break.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. With only 14 minutes before we call it a day. It's Tuesday. Wednesday,
bro.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah, it's Wednesday.
Wednesday. You know, I thought today was tomorrow, a little bit earlier today. And I was told, no, it's Wednesday today.
I think it's because of the, you know, a quick change in schedule we had yesterday. So I'm still stuck in yesterday.
So as we can obviously see, Helmut, you know, whether 152 countries paid their dues up until last year.
Yeah.
So far, because we're still in October, 136 countries had paid their dues. In 2023, 142 countries had paid their dues. So I'm talking about up and until December. 146 the year before, 153 2021, 144. So it just continues to fluctuate in that 142, 150 something range, or 140, 150 range there. Because clearly you and I know there's 180 to 190 members. Which clearly shows a clear discrepancy of at least 30 countries not paying their stuff. And even the DRC pays their dues. The DRC. Even its biggest, you know, antagonizer, its neighbor, Rwanda, even paid its dues. So, okay, you guys obviously know that North Korea is not a member. So too Myanmar, so too Eritrea. So you can't ask questions about those three countries.
Like, okay, yeah, you can ask Eritrea. Eritrea's diplomatic question is...
They are even an internet black hole. That's how no one knows what's going on in Eritrea. If you are media, you get a minder. Do you know what a minder is?
No idea.
A minder is someone that from the government that follows you around. They also act as your interpreter, and they ensure that you don't stoke any particular sort of like, you know,
quote unquote sensitive questions.
Or yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, there's one country in Eastern Europe that I think that sounds. Is that Tasmania? If I'm not mistaken, one of those.
That's Romania, dude. The province of Tasmania is in Romania.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Tasmania is a province of Australia. You're talking about. Is it Transylvania?
Oh, dear Lord. Okay.
That's the province's name.
At least I went into reality.
Transylvania is a province.
I thought
of Romania. Not Dracula's. It's a province, Transylvania.
Isn't Dracula based on Vlad the Impaler?
Yes. And because of his tendencies.
Yeah.
But Vlad the Impaler was a very angry guy.
Well, to be fair, he was honest.
Yeah, he was an honest angry guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't hurt an animal. I'm a people person. People misunderstood that.
And then he started hurting a lot of people.
When he said he's a people person, he meant he doesn't hurt animal, but people check. People thought, he's not Vlad the Impaler will send a message very clear. Hence the title, The Impaler.
If you guys don't know what his favorite punishment method was, it's in the name, to impale. And it was painful.
For the sake of your sanity, don't Google that.
And please don't watch the picture.
Don't.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I like about reverse psychology, someone is Googling right now.
And they will go, Vlad the Impaler. Why did they call him Vlad the Impaler? Who was Vlad the Impaler?
Someone is going down the rabbit hole.
And then they will say all the nasty things that guy came up to.
You and I are only seeing heaven view once.
No, Almud, at least they will ask me, why did you not change your ways, my boy? You know, that is based on the assumption that it's Saint Peter meeting us at the gate.
Yeah.
And Saint Peter is asking, why did you not change your ways, my boy? You're even a Catholic boy. What were you thinking? I would just say, what are you talking about?
No.
This one. Yeah, send him there.
I would just say, honorable, denying our Lord and Savior. Get out of here.
You are even going to honorable. That's the quickest you'll be sent.
Down the abyss.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, what are some of the, expected impacts of, expected impacts of these budget shortfalls? Because if you're talking about cutting staff, you also, that will obviously cascade into negatively impacting the, the amount of work, in all these programs that, could have been done, given the right budget and the right staff. Yeah, but all that aside, I think now the Secretary General, he is looking, is dealing with a situation of cutting a limb to save the body, because the priority are the projects. So, it's better to basically cut your staff and save the projects than basically just call off the projects and then pay staff, because the question is, what is the staff going to do if the projects are not running? So that makes a lot of sense. Looking at it from that angle, it's already giving me a picture of how the SDG status report of next year is going to look like. Sobering times two reading.
But Hamoud, if they have up until end of December, I mean, what's the
issue? You can bet some of them. There are those that are going to pay their dues. The fact that they have until December, I think, shows that this was somewhat of a motivation or a reminder for those ones that have not paid their annual contributions to basically, pull up your socks. I think this discussion, this topic is going to be more dark and gloomy if take for example next year, and we're still talking about countries that did not settle their 2025 annual contributions. But for now, we're in October. We have... these guys don't have a lot of time. We're in October.
Helmut, it's an EFT, bruh. It's not complicated stuff.
If you haven't paid...
It's an EFT situation.
If you haven't paid...
Yeah.
You can easily give them... it's sort of like owing someone money, and you tell them you'll pay on the... you get paid on the 20th, and you tell them that, okay, you know what, by the 25th, I'll give you your money. And then 23rd goes, 24th goes, 25th, you are now in 25th, and like, okay, what's going on here?
Then the phone calls are not going through.
They still have time. They still have time to make their dues, and I think, I think they still, like you just said, okay, it's an EFT, it's very easy to do. But if you look at, I don't know about, I don't know if all countries are the same. Actually, this is not something I looked into. Do all countries, at least, or most countries have the same month as a financial year? Like we have March?
I don't think so. I really don't think
so. So that's then can easily be assumed as one of those things that basically factors in, because if our financial year is November, who would have November as a financial year? Who would have the financial year starting in November? Because if your financial year starts in November, then you should have settled your dues already.
We are doomed, yes.
Yeah.
That's how the dues get settled. We are doomed.
Yeah. And they are, I know that they're given like 2 years, or basically, let me just say, 1 year grace period. If you don't, take for example, if you don't pay your 2025 financial, financial contributions or annual contributions, and you are basically you still attend all the events and participate regularly, and come 2026, if by the end of 2026, then your voting in the General Assembly is cut off. Unless the General Assembly look at it, to the reasons behind your non-payment and are satisfied that it's something basically reasonable, not because you bought a bunch of Lambos. But if if it's something reasonable, take for example, you are experiencing some economic decline, COVID-19, COVID-19 is one very good example where you can be excused if you're a developed country who was heavily impacted by the lockdowns, where because not all countries are built different, are built the same economically. The COVID-19 lockdowns or COVID-19 pandemics impacted both developed and developing countries equally, but the severity of that impact was more visible, or was more negative, for developing countries, because they don't have the economic muscles to basically withstand the beating that came with the lockdowns. Because when you halt transport and then you close down your borders, there is goods are not moving. If goods are not moving, money is not moving. So there are no economic activities taking place, which takes a toll. Basically gives one heck of a blow to an economy. Now, if you are a developing country, it's much worse. So now, if that's the reason why you did not pay your dues, you're forgiven. But if it was just based on greed, then. But before I continue, life reads.
Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142 *45845 # punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win big with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to our social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. The Vita University with the 2026 applications are now open for Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education. Programs on offer, Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, for Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, we're in October, the 22nd. Have a little faith. It shall be settled, the dues. What I still don't understand is nothing was mentioned about other budgets. I'm assuming those ones are going just fine, like the peacekeeping one, because this update was primarily about the regular budget.
Well, regular and if you can call it like specialist budgets or specialist things. They obviously they obviously have various kinds of sort of like budgetary allocations. They've got regular budget and working capital budget, which is technically the two things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
They've obviously got something known as the prior peacekeeping assessment, which obviously speaks towards where the UN has to pay member states who've sent peacekeeping forces to various particular peacekeeping and police peacekeeping missions or where participate in them.
Yeah.
And then there's a very interesting thing, specifically this report that I cited a little bit earlier, that speaks towards how to improve said particular financial position of the UN. Now, the presentation that was done on 9 October, still in this year, or still in this month, sorry, was a presentation that was done by the Undersecretary for Management, Strategy and Policy, where they noted specifically that the UN had collected $2.9 billion in 2023. In 2024, $3.2 billion. And in 2025, they collected $3.4 billion. But, okay, the totals I just read were literally what they wanted to have. What was actually collected by 30 September this year was $2.3 billion. For 2024, by end of that year, $3.3 billion. So they literally were $100 million over the 3.2 level. Hence the reason why I told you they still haven't up until December.
Yeah.
And by end of 2023, they only reached $2.4 billion, but they needed $2.9 billion. So they were literally 500 million sure. below target. Now, obviously, cash, budgeting cash, and all those particular things, as they would call these particular labels that they use here, take various forms. So you've got cash flow to deal with certain particular functions, and you've got budgeted cash for programs running active. This obviously means that this has been a long-standing issue, unfortunately, that the UN has struggled with. Because you can have a guy like Namibia that said, you know what, I paid my $240,000. What more do you want from me? I paid
Not paying someone else dues.
Yeah, I already paid my $200,000. I don't know what you guys want more from me. So this once again falls on the countries that are supposed to pay their dues.
And haven't.
That have to sort of like be the, you know, said particular financiers of their situation to reach their allotment of monies coming in. But I mean, it's something that even happens even on a church or in a church, you know, council discussion here in Namibia.
Yeah, you basically always have, any type of contributions.
Yeah, yeah, where you rely on community engagement or community contributions. You will always, always have a discussion. I mean, not to make myself look like the most model of Catholics here, but I'm not someone that pays my tithes. So if I have to marry anyone, just let people, you know, that'll be a bit of a hurdle to overcome. So it makes things.
Instead of, so when it comes to taking money for some contributions, like,
you know, those are almost run-of-the-mill contributions that you pay most day in the church, you know.
Yeah, so honey, where is this money going?
But a tithe is literally, in Afrikaans, the word translates to a tinder. It's literally a deduction from your salary, from your job.
Yeah.
It's not you're there putting money in the money basket during the church session on a Sunday.
Yeah.
It's a contribution of your salary. It's a tenth of your salary. It's a tenth. Do you see how heavy it now becomes, Samuel?
Yeah, I know. We have that in our church too.
Yeah.
Which makes me go.
So it's literally the same.
We'll see next month. And I've been saying next month for the past 5 years.
Or the pastor calls you and you're like, you know what? I've got that thing, you know, on a Sunday.
We have this program, drop me a missed call name, women's ministry, kids programs and all that.
Yeah.
Looking at that, I'm looking at my holiday plans and like, I will have to settle this in prayer. So, 4 minutes. Privately with our Lord and Savior. So, 4 minutes past the hour of six. That brings us into the business and economic segment discussion. That means for yours truly here. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You all stay blessed and please do stay tuned for business and economic segment with David.
And on my side, guys, same time, same place again tomorrow here on your number one talk radio station. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company. We'll see each other again, same time, same place.